Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
There is an op-ed piece in the New York Times, the Supreme Court's disorienting elevation of religion. It's about two recent Supreme Court cases, one that has to do with free speech, although the op-ed seems to think it's about freedom of religion, and the other one does have to do with freedom of religion. What does the op-ed get right, and what does it get terribly wrong? Welcome back to Issues Etc. Joining us to talk about this op-ed in the New York Times, Jake Warner. He's senior counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom's appellate team. ADF represented a Christian website designer in the case 303 Creative v. Elenis. Jake, welcome.
Thanks for having me today.
Tell us about these two cases the Supreme Court decided recently that involve both free speech and the free exercise of religion.
Well, sure. Well, let me start with 303 Creative v. Elenis. On June 30th, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled for free speech, holding that Colorado could not force a graphic designer to promote speech inconsistent with her core beliefs. It held that Americans are free to say what they believe without fear of government punishment. This is a big win for all Americans. As part of that case, Colorado threatened to compel a Christian graphic designer to create custom websites celebrating views of marriage that went against her faith. And after losing in courts below, the U.S. Supreme Court held that the government doesn't have that authority. The First Amendment protects the rights of all Americans to say what they believe without fear of government punishment. And this is a big win, not just for those who agree with the Christian idea of marriage, but those who hold all kinds of views, because no one should be forced to say things that they don't believe. This was a major ruling for free speech and one that benefits all Americans. Secondly, the U.S. Supreme Court decided a religious freedom case, Groff v. DeJoy. And there, the court really just clarified what Title VII means for religious employees. Basically, if an employee has a sincere religious objection to something that they're asked to do, the employer has to give them a reasonable accommodation. They have to give some kind of substantial reason for why that they can't allow for the employee's religion. And the context of that case was there was a U.S. postal worker. And we all know the U.S. Postal Service has begun performing its services on Sundays in many places. This worker, he takes Sunday as a Sabbath and could not work on Sunday. But instead of trying to accommodate this one day a week request for a Sabbath, the government would not accommodate him and punished him for it, ending up in his separation from the Postal Service. Well, the court said, look, you got to do more for religious workers here. You can't just exclude them without having a really good reason for doing so. And those are the two big cases that we've seen recently dealing with free speech and free exercise of religion coming down from the U.S. Supreme Court.
Why do you think the media wants to portray, in particular, 303 Creative as a not a free speech or a compelled speech case, but a freedom of religion case?
Well, what we've seen in recent weeks is a really coordinated effort to malign this incredible free speech win, including those who defend free speech. Some of it could be from a lack of understanding. That case presented a pretty critical issue for all Americans. Can the government force anyone to speak things that they don't believe? It's an idea that we should all get behind as a nation, is that the answer should be no. The government doesn't have that power. And that ruling protects all Americans, not just Christians who agree with Lori's view of marriage, but all people, including, for example, web designers who don't want to or can't create custom websites promoting views of marriage that go against their beliefs, including views critical of same-sex marriage. So part of it could be from misunderstanding, but part of it could be something more sinister. We've seen a lot of attacks in recent weeks that are just purporting false things.
The New York Times op-ed piece says that these decisions are part of what they call, quote, a striking long-term trend, especially since Amy Coney Barrett became a justice in 2020. The court has taken a sledgehammer to a set of practices and compromises that have been carefully forged over decades to balance religious freedom with other important and sometimes countervailing principles. What does that mean, and how do you respond?
Well, I think that op-ed unhealthily focuses on who's winning the cases separately from the legal principle that the court is addressing. Let's take 303 for example. In reality, the U.S. Supreme Court has just upheld a longstanding principle that government cannot force Americans to say things that they don't believe. For years, the court has held that government couldn't force students to salute and say a pledge to the American flag in school. That government couldn't force parade organizers to include parade contingents in a parade, promoting messages inconsistent with what the parade organizers want to express. This is a longstanding principle that protects all Americans. But what this op-ed does is it focuses on who wins, and it tries to cast this as something new when really the court is only upholding what our nation has been committed to for over 200 years now.
The New York Times op-ed also asserts that the limits on government's involvement in religion have, in their term, a lot of destructive language, have been smashed. Is this true?
No. In fact, what we've seen in recent cases is the court standing in the way of government trying to discriminate against people of faith. For example, it stepped in the way of governments trying to silence the speech of a football coach who wanted to pray to himself at midfield after some football games. And it's also protected religious employers from protecting their ability to hire those who share their beliefs. Really, what the Supreme Court is doing in many of these cases is just leveling the playing field, ensuring that government doesn't discriminate against people of faith. And this is something that our country has long treasured. And in fact, it highlights a different point from what that op-ed is trying to make. And that's this, is that the Supreme Court is often upholding principles of equality and ensuring that government doesn't treat people of faith worse than other people.
So why does religion have a protected status in the U.S. Constitution and in U.S. law?
Well, it's critical. Freedom of religion is critical for all people, no matter your faith or even if you have no faith. It gives us all the freedom to explore why we exist and then live consistent with the answers that we find on some of life's most important issues. It was such a critical value that our founders protected it explicitly in the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. It's the very First Amendment in the Bill of Rights, and that's because it's important to protecting all Americans' freedom to live consistently with what they believe without fear of government punishment.
The New York Times piece implies or first states that a lot of previous courts' decisions protecting religious freedom dealt with minority religions and then seems to imply that Christians should be given less protections just because Christianity is a mainstream and not a minority religion. What are your thoughts?
Well, that obviously advocates a pretty sinister form of religious discrimination. If that op-ed is taken at face value, it suggests that people in minority religions have greater freedom to express their religious views and live consistently with their faith than people who hold to a majority religion. And that's not how our Constitution works. In fact, that puts inequality into the system. It doesn't take it out. In reality, the First Amendment protects people of all faiths, including people of no faith at all, and it protects them on equal grounds. People in minority faiths, they should be protected, but no more or less than people in majority faiths.
What are equal treatment laws at the heart of some of these cases, and how are they consistently misinterpreted in the media's coverage of these cases?
Sure. Well, let's take the 303 Creative case. There you had a public accommodation law that forbids discrimination based on protected characteristics. And if you look back in our nation's history, these laws serve very important purposes, ensuring that people have access to basic goods and services. But over time, these laws have substantially expanded. They now cover more protected traits and they expand into more fields. And what we've seen is that governments have been misusing these laws to force people to say things that they don't believe. In other words, these laws are being misused to compel speech, not just access to basic goods and services. And when the government misuses these laws in that way to coerce speech, they tread into unconstitutional territory. And our Supreme Court has long held that this is a problem with the First Amendment, that the Supreme Court really didn't break new ground, at least on this principle, in the 303 Creative decision.
What do you make of Justice Sotomayor's speculation in her minority opinion that the 303 Creative ruling could lead to racial discrimination?
Well, it's completely false. What the decision does is it says, look, these public accommodation laws, they are going to continue to protect people against status-based discrimination. But what they can't do is force people to promote messages inconsistent with their deepest beliefs. And if you're looking for a slip argument, Justice Gorsuch really highlighted the problem in the majority opinion. Were it otherwise, government could force any speaker to say anything that the government wants them to say. And that is a complete violation of the First Amendment and everything that a free nation stands for.
What are the real implications of both the 303 Creative and the Groff rulings?
Well, the implication for 303 Creative is that all Americans should be free to say what they believe without fear of government punishment. Governments can no longer misuse state law to force people to say things that the government wants them to say. So the government doesn't have a monopoly over a person's speech anymore. So it's a big win for all Americans. And then when you look at DeGroff, that decision really says, look, Title VII means what it says. Religious employees deserve reasonable accommodation to live out their faith without fear of adverse consequences when it's not a big problem for their employer. It just sets the record straight because for the past few years, at least, courts have been a lot more permissive and letting employers punish religious employees in ways that they might not need to.
Finally, what role does religious freedom play in the protection of our other freedoms?
Well, I think if we look around the world, we see that civil liberties travel together. Countries that protect religious freedom are often those who protect free speech and other vibrant democratic principles. And the countries that protect religious freedom are those who provide the best treatment to minorities and the most vulnerable among us. So if we look around the world, the countries that protect religious freedom most vigorously are the countries that are the most successful and the most noble and the most protective of people in other ways.
Jake Warner is senior counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom's appellate team. ADF represented a Christian website designer in the case 303 v. Alenis. You'll find a link to Alliance Defending Freedom at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Jake, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer and Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be alongside on the other side of the break to respond to your unanswered Bible questions. Stay tuned.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
You wish your classical school could do more for struggling learners, uncertain where to begin? The Memoria Press Schools Division includes Cheryl Swope, author of Simply Classical, A Beautiful Education for Any Child. The Schools Division will happily assist your school. Memoria Press offers an entire line of special needs resources for teaching math, reading, spelling, and more. Contact schools at memoriapress.com or order directly from simplyclassical.com with coupon code LPR23.
I am beautiful because I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
I am accepted because I'm a part of His family through Jesus' shed blood.
Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis, Illinois, shines the light of Christ in one of the most impoverished cities in America. Learn how to support their mission work at unityesl.org. unityesl.org.
Today, with the help of the Holy